Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Gianna Hayes. And Gianna, of course, has a 4 degrees. She has a PhD. She actually has written 14 books. She has her own radio program, and she's been kind enough to have me on there in the evening. So I thought we'd reciprocate by having her on here. And, of course, I really want to know what her thoughts are. We thought maybe we would start out talking about what really happened on September 11th. You know, we saw on television, and television is a wonderful medium, to give you the impression that you're seeing the truth, whereas, of course, sometimes you're not. We saw, certainly, two planes hit one hit the South Tower. The following day, we were shown the pictures of the plane hitting the North Tower. But, of course, shortly thereafter, why the towers collapsed. And the question is, did the towers collapse because the planes hit the buildings, or was there some other reason that they collapsed? And what happened to Building 7? Have we really been told the truth about what happened? Because, of course, this was certainly it was a watershed event and is a direct result of what happened on September 11th. Suddenly we went to war with Afghanistan, and then we had a preemptive strike on Iraq. Iraq had nothing to do with what happened, but of course Iraq sometime in the future might become a menace to the United States, so we really had to attack Iraq, and now 1 million people are dead, and we find out that there's no end in sight. Well, I think we have to go back then and re-examine what happened on September 11th. Gianna, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Stan.
Why don't you pick up the story and tell us your thoughts, because I know you've been analyzing this on your radio station, on your radio program, and we'll tell our listeners later on how they can tune in on you, but go right ahead.
Well, from my research, what I find is the very day that it happened, and I remember I was standing in the kitchen, and as soon as the first plane hit, I think I was just mesmerized. When the second plane hit, I knew something wasn't right. And I was on a radio show right after that, and I had said on the air, I think that could have been an inside job. I cannot begin to tell you the amount of flack that I got for saying that. And now here we are many years later, and people are asking, was it an inside job? Well, we know certain things. One of the things that we know was that Silverstein certainly took out an insurance policy right before, 2 days before the buildings went down. He requested that Building 7 go down when actually Building 7 didn't really need to do that. More importantly, though, is Bush sitting there reading this book to children upside down. And if you notice the expression, and I did a freeze frame on his face, there's no surprise. When he is being told by his aide that this happened, there's no surprise. And he continues to read. Now, granted, we could say that he didn't want to alarm the kids, but when the commander-in-chief hears that, I don't think you continue to sit there. You just say to the kids, excuse me, I have an emergency, and leave, or excuse me, I have to leave. Additionally, there was $2.3 million that was unaccounted for by Rumsfeld's own admission, and this was less than a week before, which quickly became forgotten because of 9/11. There's that whole issue that 9/11 scholars talk about, and I've had a lot of them on my show, Stan, and they are all saying that there is no way that building could have come down without explosions in the building.
All right, you hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment with Gianna Hayes talking about what really happened. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our guest today is Gianna Hayes. And Gianna actually has a PhD. She has 4 degrees. She's written 14 books. She has her own radio program, and we're very, very pleased to have her with us. I've been on her program, and says we wanted to have our on our program. And we're going to talk about the watershed event that drew us into the war with Afghanistan and the war with Iraq. And of course, that was the September 11th, 2001 attack on the World Trade Center and on the Pentagon, and of course Flight 93 going down in Pennsylvania. And the question is, have we been told the truth? Is it possible that the truth has been actually withheld from the American people? It is not simply by coincidence that it was just the day before the 9/11 attack that the plan for going to a war with Al-Qaeda was completed. Now, if you doubt that, that is a page, I think, 60 or 61 of the book Without Precedent by Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton, the chairman and co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission. And is it simply by chance that Building 7 came down at 5:20 in the evening? How did that come down? It certainly looked like a controlled demolition to me. And to this very day, nobody can really explain why it came down. Oh, there was damage. Well, certainly lots of buildings have damages. Other planes have been hit. Other buildings have been hit by planes. The Empire State Building was hit by a plane, but that building didn't collapse. So why did Building 7 come down? There's so many unanswered questions about what happened that day, and the government wants to attack and vilify and demonize anybody who raises the question, but to this very day, none of the government evaluations have told us why, or why the basement wreckage of the World Trade Center burned for 3 months after the attack with an intensity of a crematorium. And, of course, if we want to justify that, where does it come from? Well, there's a book, Who Were They? And it was written by the coroner who actually evaluated the DNA identity of the various people who survived, I should say the bodies that were collected. To this very date, 1,100 bodies have never been found. No trace of them at all. They just simply disappeared. So go ahead, pick up Gianna.
Well, actually, I want to correct myself. I said 2.3 million. It's really trillion. So $2.3 trillion. The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld had confessed that amount of money was missing from the Department of Defense. And he says, we cannot trade $2.3 trillion in transactions. Well, it certainly was a political embarrassment.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Gianna has simply commented that shortly before the 9/11 attack, Donald Rumsfeld had come forward and made the admission that the Defense Department had just misplaced $2.3 trillion. They had no idea where that money had gone. $2.3 trillion has just disappeared, and nobody has any idea. But then after 9/11, who really cared?
Who cared, right. They covered it up. I mean, why would anybody even think about that when, you know, we have 3,000 people who have been essentially incinerated or jumped from, you know, the high building? But I was saying before that the 9/11 scholars say that there is no way that those buildings would have come down, Stan, just by an airplane hitting them. Now, granted, any airplane hitting those buildings would have caused significant damage, but the way it collapsed was so methodical that it looked like a demolition job. I have interviewed demolition experts, and they say that that is exactly how it would have fallen if it were intentionally demolished, you know, to get rid of the building or whatever. So if you talk to William Rodriguez as well, who was in the basement of those buildings, actually I think it was up one level, he had heard the bombs go off. And he's talked about this all over the world, and nobody's listening to him. And he's saying that before those planes ever hit the building, he had heard the explosions.
And the explosions were in the basement of the building before the plane hit above. And we actually have an interview with William Rodriguez where he tells that story. And, of course, that's in our four-tape set entitled, Why Did the Buildings Come Down? So, I mean, why would there have been explosions in the basement before the plane hit up above unless this was a planned demolition?
Well, I think, in my eyes, I think it was a planned demolition. too many things fell together. And then we have to ask ourselves this question as well. Why would they do it? Why would somebody want to take those buildings down? Of course, certainly for money. Not only money from insurance, but more so money for oil. But here's the truth of the matter, Stan, is we would not be where we are today with Homeland Security, with the loss of our rights, the loss of our ability to practice Christianity or to be patriots, unless that happened. That was a catalyst to implement the preview to martial law.
Well, I agree with you totally. In fact, if you, and for any of our listeners who would like to challenge what Sienna has said, there's a book we quoted just a moment ago. It's entitled The Without Precedent, written by Thomas Kane and Lee Hamilton, the chairman and co-chairman of the 911 Commission. And on page 181 of that book, and I quote, Jamie Gorelick, and Jamie was one of the members of the 9 Commission. Jamie Gorelick pressed the issue on why the Bush administration had not held senior-level meetings on counterterrorism before September 2001 and why more had not been done to take defensive measures in response to the threat, reporting over the spring and summer. At that point, Condoleezza Rice pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take dramatic action against Al-Qaeda before 9-1-1, either abroad or in reforming government at home, and said, until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old cultures and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that sort of change. Now that's Condoleezza Rice. I went back and I read the 9-1-1 committee report. That's exactly what she said, but you'll find that, I believe, on page 181 of the book Without Precedent. And she's saying there's got to be an incident, there's got to be something got to happen to get people to change their attitude, to change their outlook, to be willing to accept more government regulation. And boy, it sure happened on September 11th. And that was what, when she was asked why you didn't try to stop the attack when you knew it was coming. And that was a response. Of course, there had to be an incident, and 3,000 Americans died. And I wonder why nobody ever comments on that quotation. You can find it in the 9/11 Committee report. I've read it there. You can find it, of course, in the book Without Precedent.
Well, and additionally, don't forget that Bush aided the bin Ladens who live in Maryland and were related to Osama bin Laden, assuming, Stan, there truly is an Osama bin Laden, he aided them in getting out of the country.
There's no question at all that the bin Laden family were here. They got special treatment to get them out of the country. And why would Osama bin Laden's relatives get special treatment from the Bush administration? And why would the Saudis get special treatment? And why, in the initial examination, that was the joint Senate House Intelligence Committee report, why did the Bush administration remove 26 pages of that report so that nobody would know what the commission came up with? There is a report, and the Bush administration just extracted 26 or 28 pages, and nobody ever asked what was on those pages.
Well, and we also have to take into consideration the idea of oil. I think it's ironic and pathetic that we go to Iraq on the basis of war with Al-Qaeda because they terrorized us, supposedly, and yet our oil wasn't as high as it was before then, but yet we've taken control of the oil fields, and look what we're paying now. And you know what Bush said, since the majority of his cabinet are, the majority of them, ex-oil executives, he said, which was reported in the Washington Post, he said, I'm the commander, and see, I don't need to explain. I do not need to explain why I say things. This is a direct quote. That's the interesting thing about being president. Maybe somebody needs to explain to me why they say something, but I can, and I don't feel like I owe anybody an explanation. And then on March 12th of 2002, he said, I don't know where bin Laden is. I have no idea, and I really don't care. It's not that important. It's not our priority, unquote.
Of course, he was a man who promised we're going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He promised the American people that, And, of course, he had no intention of carrying it out. In fact, what was really so interesting, if you read the stories told by the men who were in Afghanistan initially, they were there, they went there to get Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and they weren't allowed to when Osama bin Laden, of course, was trapped at Tora Bora with his al-Qaeda followers. Why we didn't send in our own troops? We sent in Arab troops who were loyal to bin Laden, and of course they allowed him to escape. Well, then, if we went to war to get Osama bin Laden, why didn't we follow him into Pakistan? Oh, we couldn't do that. That's a sovereign country. Well, so is Afghanistan, a sovereign country. We went to war with Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden. We went to war with a sovereign country, but we wouldn't go to war with another sovereign country to get him. Or maybe... maybe the attack on Afghanistan had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. We needed the justification to go to war, and that was it.
Well, and we've got to also keep in mind that the bin Laden was on the payroll of the CIA. And we trained, actually, we sent arms and trained those, quote-unquote, al-Qaeda terrorists through bin Laden. But in the back of my mind, what I always ask, is there really... in Osama bin Laden, or is he a composite of people or somebody they have created simply to blame this war on?
Well, I think that I think there probably really wasn't Osama bin Laden, but certainly Mrs. Bhutto, shortly before she was assassinated, told Gordon Frost, I think it's Gordon Frost, the commentator, and you'll find this up on the internet if you want to look for it, in an interview that's filmed and up on YouTube, she said bin Laden's been dead for a couple of years. And pretty soon she was dead. Within just a matter of a few weeks, she was dead herself. And, of course, all of the information I have is that bin Laden's been dead for a long time. But they need an enemy to rally us against, and it doesn't matter whether he's dead or alive. Well, as long as they can convince us he's alive, and they put his picture up on the screen, and everybody shivers in terror because there's Osama bin Laden who wants to take away our freedom. You have to have an enemy. You only have to go back and read, of course, 1984. There was a fellow there who was the enemy of Big Brother, and of course, they would always show his picture to rally the people behind the government.
Well, I agree. When you look at this from all angles, and you study the tapes, even if you go to YouTube, and this is the amazing part that I just don't understand why people do this. They deny the fact that there were bombs in there, yet... if you look at any of the videotapes where the firemen are scurrying around when it happened, and they're screaming, Stan, there are bombs in there, there are bombs in there. Bombs are going off. Why is it then our media attempts to persuade us by saying, no, there were never any bombs in there, it was two planes? Well, first of all, those buildings supposedly were capable of taking the impact of a plane. When they were built, that's what they were built for, and at that time, the most sophisticated planes. But, you know, if you can hear this on tape and you see our firemen on the day that this happened, at the moment the buildings were hit, and they were trying to rescue, because, you know, they were, really was never a rescue after that, Stan. It became a cleanup, really. But, you know, they were attempting to get to the people they could get to, and they're yelling and screaming, don't go in here, there are bombs going off. Well, why? Why are there bombs going off?
Well, nobody ever wants to ask that question. Nobody ever wants to ask why the taking down of Building 7 was a controlled demolition. And you only have to look at YouTube. And, of course, if you just Google in YouTube or a video, a Building 7 video, and they have about half a dozen of them there. And, of course, you have to know that when you're taking down a building, the first thing you do is collapse the central supports so the building collapses in, doesn't collapse out. And that's exactly what you'll see. The central supports of the building collapse, and the building begins to collapse in. The central part of the roof fails and falls, and then the base of the building just disintegrates and the building comes down. That's a controlled demolition. How did Osama bin Laden manage to get the explosives in the building number 7 ahead of time to take it down? And if he didn't get those explosives in there, who did? And, of course, I think it's pretty apparently that somebody knows what went on. I've talked to people who were there and who were cleaning it up, and they said it sure looked like a controlled demolition to them. We're going to be back in just a moment with Sienna Hayes. And, well, of course, this is such a vitally important issue. Because if this was an inside job, then all those people who died over in Iraq, have died for absolutely nothing. You go right ahead, Gianna.
Are we on, Stan?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, I wanted to make a comment about what you were talking about. I think that Americans have to understand that oil provides 97% of the fuel used by us, okay, and especially by our fleet of trucks and planes and ships and trains and buses and cars. This is according to www.hybridcars.com. Now, keeping that in mind, when the United States run out of oil, the American way of life is going to change dramatically. In 2000, the year 2000 alone, the United States paid $100 billion to import oil from Saudi Arabia. Well, Saudi Arabia gained about $80 billion in exports. So according to this same particular, this was, I think, mindpod.com, if I recall, Saudi Arabia ranked number one with 261.7 billion barrels of oil reserves in 2001. Iraq ranked number two with 112.5 billion barrels of oil in 2001. And the United Arab Emirates at almost 100 billion barrels of oil. Kuwait was at 96.5 and Iran at 89.7. Isn't it ironic that we are in all of those countries except for the Emirates?
Well, I think that, of course, you have to ask yourself, why are we over there? Are we really over there, of course, to bring the price of oil down? Because if we're over there to bring the price of oil down, we're doing a terrible job. The price was actually reached $122 a barrel a day today. And, of course, before long, I think we're going to see it up at $150 a barrel. And this is not because there's a shortage of oil at all. If there is a shortage of oil, why are we filling our strategic reserves? Many members of the Senate, the House are saying, stop filling the strategic reserves. Begin taking oil out of the strategic reserves. There'll be an overabundance of oil, and then the price will come down. You know, instead of talking about, of course, doing away with the gasoline tax, why don't we do something really constructive? And instead of that, we're taking some 700,000 or 70,000 barrels of oil a day and putting them in the strategic reserves. People don't understand that the administrations do everything they can to drive up the price of oil. The American people don't understand the real objective, in my way of thinking of it, is to get us out of our cars. There is a plan. You can read it. It's a Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that came after the Second Earth Summit, where they talk about getting people out of their cars. How are they going to get them out of their cars and onto bicycles? Well, you get the price of gasoline and oil up so high they can't afford to be in their cars. And I think that's coming, Gianna. What do you think?
Well, I think that's certainly on the drawing board. I think the sad part of this, Dan, is if people sit down and really look at the evidence, they will see that there are interconnected strings everywhere. You look at the CIA, you look at Preston Bush, George Bush Sr., you go all the way back and you see that there's all this interconnectedness. One of the things that I think a lot of people missed was the popular newspaper, El Figaro, which was owned by the Carlyle Group, and it also employed George Bush Sr. and the Bin Laden family, I think that's interesting in itself, reported that Osama Bin Laden had some type of treatment done. This was about 72 days before 9/11 at the American Hospital in Dubai, at which point he met a senior CIA official.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Gianna Hayes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Gianna was simply talking about how nothing is as it appears to be. And shortly before the 9/11 attack, there are a number of reports on the Internet that Osama bin Laden, who is, of course, this great enemy of America, and, of course, was supposedly behind a number of terrorist attacks on the United States prior to the September 11th attack, that Osama bin Laden had been at the American Hospital in Dubai, and it actually for a treatment for his renal failure. He's on dialysis, and at that time he was meeting with a high CIA official. Now, why would a high CIA official be meeting with Osama bin Laden, who, of course, at that point was the number one terrorist who was threatening America, declared war on America? Why would a CIA be official be meeting with Osama bin Laden shortly before the September 11th attack. That just doesn't make sense. Anybody out there in the listening audience who wants to check it out, you can Google it in. If you can't get it, we'll find it for you. We have it in our records. This was well known at the time. Why would he be meeting with a high CIA official, Sienna?
Well, you know, and I think what's unique about that whole thing, Stan, was why wasn't he arrested? You have a CIA senior official who is meeting with him. If Bin Laden is this great American public enemy, why wasn't he arrested? Instead, they had a conversation. 72 days later, we have 9/11.
I mean, the thing is that there's so many things that just don't make sense. Our government obviously knew, of course, about the attacks that were coming on the American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. How do we know that? Why, the man who planned it, of course, was an FBI informant. And you can read that, all about that in the triple cross that go into the background of that. But it was an FBI informant who planned that bombing. And, of course, the question is, why would we have a man plan the bombing? It's like the first World Trade Center bombing with a man who was making the bomb just happened to be the FBI employee. You remember that story, but, of course, we never talk about that anymore. It's amazing how quickly we get the past and all these unanswered questions.
Well, we forget the past well enough that there are a lot of people out there voting for Hillary Clinton. We forget the past well enough, Stan, that they're going to vote for Obama when you consider that Obama has these huge ties with Farrakhan and certainly with Ayers, who was one of the responsible parties for bombing the Pentagon. You know, and he had given $25,000 to Wright. Now, he says he is disenfranchised with Wright and he's disassociated himself with him. 10-1, though, you're going to see him, after everything calms down, going back to Wright. However he says that, all of these years, what did he spend, 22 years with Wright? Something didn't wear off on him?
Well, because Wright is a black racist. I mean, not that everything he says is wrong, but he is a racist, he hates whites, and that's unconscionable. There may be injustice towards blacks, there may be some truth in some of the things he says, but of course he spews hatred, and that's unconscionable. And why anybody would stay in his church, well, anybody would stay in his church is not fit to be the president of the United States, in my opinion.
Well, and I would have to agree with you on that. My concern with Obama is, first of all, that his background, you know, everybody says, oh, no, he really wasn't raised a Muslim. Well, he was. And if you study his background, he was. The other thing was he was also raised by an atheist white mother. Okay, fine. So now we have a guy who's raised partly Muslim and partly atheist, and he has these ties. The ties are the scary part. Ties with not people that we hold up in the limelight and say these are role models. They're not role models. These are people who are trying to actually cause dissension among the races. Look what Farrakhan has said about the white people. And see, I think this is leading to all of this. I think it's leading that there will be dissension in our country.
I think you're exactly right. I think they want to turn black against white and white against black and everybody against the Hispanics. They want to play one group against the other. They want a multicultural, multilingual society so they can play the groups against one another. It's the old adage of divide and conquer, and it's working very well in America today.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more. The thing is, when are people going to wake up to this and realize that we have three candidates? They're all bad. And all three candidates have ties that go very deep to the power elite, to the people like the Carlyle Group, to the people like the CIA that do the drug smuggling and whatnot. They have ties, Stan. They have ties to such power elite groups that they are beholden to them. So what are they going to do for Americans?
Well, I think we're in real trouble here in the United States because I believe the media is controlled and we're just fortunate to be able to at least get some of our ideas out on the internet, on shortwave, and certainly buying time on radio stations across America. But there are still a few radio stations that will allow us to tell the truth, and that's what we do 5 hours a day, and I think you do it, what, 3 or 4 hours a day?
Well, I do it 2 hours a week.
2 hours a week. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with Sienna right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we were just talking about the control of the media. Actually, of course, according to Dr. Ben Bagdakian, professor up at University of California, 90 to 95% of the major media outlets in America are controlled by one of five mega corporations that largely determine what we hear, what we read, and what we see. The book is called The New Media Monopoly. That's The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdakian. You pick up this story, Gianna.
Well, you know, I have researched the media, and I make my college students research the media because I want them to understand the media is extremely biased. And you're right, there are five, some say six, corporations or people who own all the mainstream media in the world. Now, if you analyze that and you look at that, what does that tell you, Stan? It tells you that what they want us to know, we will know. What they don't want us to know, they will omit. And so we never know even it happened. What they want us to know with an ounce of truth, but with a lot of lies, they can manufacture. So then you have to ask yourself, okay, these people who are reporting on the news, the Charles Gibsons, you know, et cetera, are they aware of this? Well, they're the very members of the Council on Foreign Relations. They're members of the Bilderbergers. They're members of the Trilateral Commission. So, of course, they're aware of this.
But, of course, the reporters, if they do report the truth, will either lose their job or the article will never be published. And there's the people in the rewrite room and the editors who determine what we read. And of course, many times, reporters would like to get the truth out. And, of course, their stories are simply spiked.
When you look at this media and you see that, you know, Disney owns this chunk and Times Warner owns this chunk. So when you listen, when you read, see, they've got us everywhere, Stan. They've got us not only in the media, which, of course, is so deceptive. We don't really know what is true anymore and what isn't. They get us in educational system because it is a program they put in. There's an agenda that they have, and they put that agenda in, and parents who don't pay attention to what their kids are learning, they're going to be in for a real shock. You know, they get us in religion because they're cracking down on Christians now. You know, where aren't they hurting us? They have this so well planned out to put in this new world order, and that's what it comes down to, that a few people, powerful people, extremely wealthy people, will run the world. We have no outlets. We have no place to go and say, can you fix this? Who are we going to say that to?
Well, of course, our job is to try to get people to think. I really believe, of course, behind all of the effort to bring about the New World Order is an effort to bring about a New World Religion. I believe they're powerful spirits. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess the doctor is Gianna Hayes, and of course, as we mentioned earlier, she has a PhD, she has 4 degrees, she's written 14 books, she does her own radio program, and certainly an amazing, amazing individual. And of course, she certainly believes that there is a small elite group that wants to rule the world and is moving towards this one world government. And I was just commenting that I believe that, of course, behind this effort to bring about the world government, behind these people of great power and influence who control the media, are powerful spiritual forces. And what was your thought on that? Do you think that's true?
Powerful? What kind of forces? Yeah.
Spiritual forces.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we talked about this on my show, and I've had you on before, and I asked you, do you think that there are truly demons out there that could be in possession of some of our leaders? You know, when you think about it, it almost sounds absurd, doesn't it? But in reality, that's exactly what the Bible tells us, how the devil is going to conquer. And we are seeing it now. And for me, and again, I don't know about your listeners, but for me, I'm a Christian. And what I see unfolding, I see it happening on a regular basis that is a crescendo. It's building up to that point where Christ will return. And Scripture, if you read Scripture, it's there. It's blueprinted.
And I think what we're doing, really, in many respects, seeing this battle is described in the Bible being played out before our very eyes. And I don't think most people recognize it. What really saddens me is that most Christians really don't understand that we're seeing the fulfillment of the ancient prophecies.
Well, here's what I think worries me the most, and I've said this on my show as well, and I think I even asked you this when you were on my show the last time a few weeks ago. What if the people who are the power elite what if they are contriving the situation for us to believe that the end of the world is here, when in reality it's not God's time? But man, these particular people have set this up, have built it in, have constructed a false construct that actually this could happen, and that we're in that time, and they would benefit from that. So that's the only thing that I think I really worry about, Stan, is that what if it's not God's time and it's man who is creating this for himself?
Well, I think it may very well be true. Having, of course, read the writings of the Luciferians, they really want, of course, to bring about the things that are prophesied in the Bible. They want to bring it about because they want to get their man in charge of the world. Now, certainly they intended to do this back in the early 1920s, as I remember, with Krishnamurti, and it wasn't God's time, and it just didn't work out. And they wanted to do this in the early 1980s when they were actually running ads in major newspapers all across America saying, the Christ has come, the Christ is here, he's about to declare himself. And this was Benjamin Krim, and they ran the articles in the Reader's Digest. But it wasn't the right time. They are doing everything they can, of course, to create and precipitate this world crisis. But you're absolutely right, between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference, but there are so many things that we see today that have never been there before. Certainly this move towards real food shortages throughout the world. Then the possibility of famine is described in Revelation 6:8. And then, of course, there is a very real possibility of a worldwide nuclear war coming. And there's a very real possibility of new plagues being spread, because I believe that they're working on all sort of genetically altered terrible diseases. We already see some of them in the form of chronic fatigue and Lyme disease and AIDS and Ebola and certainly the chronic fibromyalgia that disables so many people. There are all sorts of new diseases. I believe they're man-made and they're plaguing the entire world. But, you know, certainly only God knows when this is all going to come down. Certainly I don't.
Well, the scary thing, when you think about this, Stan, is the fact that there are people out there who truly believe, I mean, of the power elite, that we can have a nuclear war and people would survive. Of course, I don't know about you, but I would not be one of the ones they would choose to survive. You know, they would simply know it's coming, go into their bunkers, because they have selected, of course, certain scientists, you know, certain doctors, certain politicians who will survive. They'll go into the bunkers, they'll wait till everything is done, and they'll reemerge. And it would not surprise me one bit if they do this nuclear war, kill off the rest of us, because you know one of the things they want is depopulation. They're so afraid that we're going to run out of resources, in spite of the fact that global warming is pretty much a hoax.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There are these bunkers. They're all over this country. They're all over Russia. They're all over China. Of course, they want to protect their population. There are no plans to preserve the general population of the United States. And certainly Russia has one area over there that's the size of the city of Moscow that they can put, really millions of people into. There's nothing comparable here. There are only a few small areas for the elite, for they will survive, but for the rest of us, they're making no plans at all, which is, of course, why we urge people to do the best that they can. And, of course, those people who make preparations may survive. Our job is to do our best. Our job is to sound the warning. We are to be the watchman on the wall described in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33. And if people don't hear our warning, why, that's their problem, not mine.
Have you given any thought to the value of putting in nuclear power plants again?
Oh, I think
not relying on energy from others.
Well, I think we should have done that a long time ago. But of course, they have lied to us. They told us, "Well, how could we possibly put those in? They could explode. How could we put them in? We don't know what to do with the fuel." We spent I don't know how many billion dollars on them on the Yucca Mountain and on certainly a place to store the spent nuclear fuel, And, of course, some judge says, well, of course, you've only figured what's going to happen in 25,000 years. You have to figure out what's going to happen in 100,000 years before you can put any nuclear fuel in there. And, of course, the obvious thing is you don't need to store it in Yucca Mountain. All you have to do is reprocess it like everybody else in the world does. There's not one person in 1,000 in the United States who even knows that this is what you do with your spent nuclear fuel. You don't leave it sitting in 50-gallon drums. You reprocess it. And we're not allowed to do that in America. Every other country can reprocess their fuel, but America can't reprocess our fuel. And we have to ask ourselves why.
Well, we know why.
I know we do. But what we try to do is try to get people to think and to ask the same question. Somebody said, you know, if we could only get people to think and to try to answer the questions, they'd come up with all these same conclusions on their own.
But, you know, people, and this is one of the things I tell my college students when I'm teaching them, don't take gospel what the media tells you, because they need to think it through. Okay, so we know that nuclear reactors are dangerous. This is true. But Stan, in the United States, in the history of the United States, and I lived near a nuclear reactor at one point, there's never been, other than the closeness of Three Mile Island, an accident. Worldwide, Chernobyl's probably the worst that we've ever had. But how many years have we had nuclear reactors? And Chernobyl would have never happened had they kept that plant up to date to begin with.
There was no containment vessel. They had a tar roof on top of there, and then we wonder why there was a problem. And, of course, you know, people, I never forget at a meeting recently, you know, some young fellow came up to me, and when he heard I was in favor of a nuclear energy, he said, well, would you want a nuclear plant right next to you? And I said, look, my son was on the on a nuclear carrier, aircraft carrier for, you know, for a better part of 6 years. He was living right close to a nuclear, you know, turbine. And certainly every one of our submarines is nuclear. All of our aircraft carriers are nuclear. There's no problem there. People live right next to them, and there's nothing to worry about because they generate their power by the steam. They create heat, they create steam, and that's what a nuclear power plant is all about. And there's not one person in America who really understands that. They think it's some sort of a nuclear reaction. They have a picture of a mushroom cloud in their mind because that's what's been programmed into mm-hmm. them by the controlled media.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they don't want the public to understand that it is not an environmental threat. That's not going to happen if people, you know, I mean, they have a lot of building safety when they build those plants. I'm not saying, Stan, that every one of them is 100% safe. A lot of it has to do with, you know, human error. But they do have a lot of, you know, fail-safe systems that they put into those. If we don't do something like that, we are going to be dependent upon the Arab nations, you know, for eternity. I suggest, and people laugh at this, but I haven't heard anybody say anything better, is we go back to nuclear power, and we use the hybrid cars that use electricity. We put the electrical meters up just like we do parking meters, and we don't have to rely on oil or fuel for our cars, and we have nuclear power for all of our other energy needs. We don't need to be relying on them.
But, of course, that's a logical plan, and nothing that's going on today is logical. It was illogical when, of course, we stopped building nuclear plants, well, about 1973. What are we talking, well over 30 years ago? There hasn't been a major nuclear plant built, at least in 35 years. And they're much more efficient. They're certainly much more cost-efficient. And the electricity from there costs very, very little. And the only reason, of course, they've run up the cost of the nuclear electricity is because of lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit by the environmentalists. And who finances the environmental movement? Why, of course, it's largely originally was financed by the oil companies because mm-hmm. they didn't want the competition. They wanted to be able to use the environmental movement to keep other people from drilling for oil. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they aren't going to drill for oil. They're not going to develop the Arctic wildlife wilderness up there. They're not going to develop ANWR, the massive oil fields that are up in Alaska and on the Aleutian Islands, because they make more money when you have shortages. But the average American can't get that through their head, that the oil companies are not trying to have an abundance of oil because they know that would bring the price down. It
well,
is
and
the,
they would be out of business,
right.
And they would lose money, and, you know, God forbid they should lose it a dollar,
right.
Let alone everything else. You know, I've had Lindsay Williams on my show countless times over the years, and he was up there on the Alaska pipeline, and he says, Gianni, there is at least, supply-wise, 200 years of oil for the United States alone in Alaska. Just in Alaska. 200 years worth of oil. What are we doing? We're getting it from, you know, the Middle East.
Well, of course, we get a lot from Mexico. We get a lot from Canada. We get oil from Venezuela and from Nicaragua. And really, do we not get the major amount of our oil from the Middle East? That really is what's supplying the oil for Europe. So why are we so concerned about that? Well, very simply, because we want to really dominate the world. This is what we're doing. America has an empire, and nobody wants to talk about it. We have our troops stationed in over 130 nations. We have over 700 overseas bases. We spend more money on our military than all the rest of the world put together, and nobody ever talks about the American empire. And, of course, we have a leader in any country in the world that doesn't go along with our program. He's either going to be very soon replaced or he's going to meet with a terrible, terrible accident. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, does he have a question or comment?
Well, a comment, if I could add something to the Building 7 discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the buildings 5 and 6, nobody pays attention to, but they stood between the towers and building 7. And these buildings were only 8 and 9 stories high. But they created a buffer between the towers and building 7. And so for people who try to promote the idea of this so-called 25% damage to building 7 at its base, there's no photographic evidence for that. And it's quite plausible that building 6 would have taken the brunt of the debris falling from the towers. And the big point here is that buildings 5 and 6 were devastated by in the course of the collapse. They burned ferociously. They were burnt out shells. Unspeakable devastation, but they did not collapse.
Okay.
Building 7, which was buffered and apparently had no damage, collapsed.
Amen. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thanks, Ray Mike. Appreciate your mentioning that. And the thing is that there's so many unanswered questions, and anybody who asks these questions immediately, demonized and radicalized. But we need to ask the questions. Why did the debris at the base of that, the Twin Towers burn for a matter of almost 3 months? At the temperature of a crematorium. At least that's what the man who was in charge of identifying the body says in his book. Who were they? Why would all that steel be burning? How do you get steel to burn? How do you get it hot enough to burn steel? Nobody ever asked. And what happened to those 1,100 bodies? Were they crushed when the building pancaked out, or were they vaporized when the building exploded, when the Twin Towers exploded? Nobody asked about those 1,100 bodies.
Ian, nobody bothers to ask what really happened to the bodies in Somerset, Pennsylvania, where the plane crashed.
Did you ever see the picture of where the plane crashed?
Yes.
There was just a big hole. There was no records at all. The records were scattered over a period of about 6 or 8 miles, but nothing there where the plane crashed. They show us a big hole in the ground, no records, and they say that's where the plane crashed. And don't ask where the wreckage is. What are you, some sort of a nut?
Well, I talked to a gentleman who was on the SAR team, and he said when they went up there to do their search and rescue, I said to him, well, what did you see up there? And there was this long pause, Dan. He didn't say anything. I said, what did you see? I said, what did it look like? He said, well, there was plane parts everywhere. And I said to him, okay. I said, if that's true, then, I said, where are the bodies? And he said, well, there are just some things we can't talk about.
And, of course, the wreckage was, of course, away from the crash site. It wasn't at the crash site.
Right. Absolutely.
And that was amazing. I mean, here you got one of the motors is a couple of miles away, from the crash site. How did the motor bounce over there? And first, they just have not told us the truth about what happened. Why can't they tell us the truth? Why,
I don't know, but what do you think happened to the bodies? I mean, I'm curious, because if that plane was really had people on it, what did they do? Did they ditch the plane and switch it? Or did that plane never have anybody on it, and they just let us believe there were people on it? And that famous let's roll call, you know?
I don't know, Gianna, and we may never know the truth about what happened that morning, other than the fact we do know that they were tracking 29 hijackings that morning. There were actually military exercises that suggested that they were actually, going to be planes hijacked and crashing into buildings. Gianna, I want you to get your, tell people how they can listen to your programs, to get to your site.
Well, they can go to, I guess hundreds of different FM radio stations across the country, but if they wanted to get it on the internet, they just simply go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com. AmericanVoiceRadio.com. It's on tomorrow night, 8 o'clock East Coast time. And just to let you know, Stan, your listeners may find this interesting. My first guests are the Canadian couple who have been told by the Canadian government that they're worshiping being Christians was a hate crime.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay, you go right ahead, Gina.
That their whole, I guess you would say their ministry, which was to show people pretty much the right way to Christ, in showing that there were some groups that were of questionable, I guess, faith. And we're talking about the Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, etc. And they had that on their website. And the Canadian government said to them they could not have that up there. They were going to be shut down. And so they're coming on the first hour to talk about it. The second hour, I have a woman coming on who's had 15 Stan, brain tumors. They removed 12. Three remain. And she said her very first brain tumor was in the exact place where she puts her cell phone. And she has all kind of information on cell phone, microwave radiation, and soft tissue cartilage brain cancer.
Well, of course, you know, there's so many things they're doing for population control. It's well known, of course, that cell phones do tend to promote cancer, and I think people should use them just as infrequently as they can or not use them at all. I mean, this is well known, of course. You can check it out on the Internet, and yet, of course, the average person is not allowed to hear that. In fact, the University of Washington did a research project where they found the relationship between cell phones and brain cancers. And they were actually threatened. They were told that they would not get any more grants if they put out the information and let the American people know. I'm so glad you're having this woman on tomorrow, Gianna.
Yeah, I think that she's going to shake a lot of people up about the whole idea. I've had Amy Worthington on in the past talking about this, and what she has to say about cell phone radiation, Dan, is so scary that unless people actually listen to that particular show, which is archived, they would never appreciate the fact that every time they put that cell phone to their head, they're irradiating their brain tissue.
And actually doing damage to the DNA. This is the unconscionable thing, and this is well known. But there's so much money that's involved in this, and then, of course, there's so many people in the world, so many useless eaters. They're doing this all throughout the world. I mean, what is so incredible along the same line is everybody knows that tobacco, you know, is harmful. It produces cancer of the lung, cancer of the pancreas, cancer of the bladder, cancer of the esophagus, the oral nasopharynx. And yet we're, today, the United States government is subsidizing the farmers that grow tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
How can you explain that from a logical point of view?
Well, there is no logic other than what you said earlier. This is all part of depopulation, because they have this great fear that there are too many people on the earth.
Yeah, we're out of time, Gianna. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. I look forward to having you on again sometime. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Gianna Hayes, and of course, she's on American Voice, and you can hear her tomorrow. She does a program at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and I've been on a program, does an excellent job. And so if you're interested, of course, go Google in American Voice, and you can get her on the Internet. You can, if you may be on one of the FM stations that actually is carrying a program. Well, this is the time when, of course, I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we do hope that many of you, if you're in a position to help us, will do that as we try little by little to expand our coverage. And now we have actually over 60 outlets every single week. Some of them maybe just half an hour a week, but at least people are hearing the truth. If you'd like to know more about what really happened on September 11th, let me suggest you get our pamphlets. We have actually three pamphlets. It's called Foreknowledge 911 Parts 1, 2, and 3. They're inexpensive. And then we have a fourth pamphlet we've done more recently, The True Story of 9/11. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, there was no reason to go to war with Iraq. The commanding generals, General Zinni, four-star Marine general, and you can go up on my internet site, and you know, where we actually have the information they brought out on 60 Minutes. He said, look, I have access to the same information as the president. I was in command of CENTCOM. Iraq was of no threat to us. We should have gone ahead and, of course, finished our war in terror instead of getting involved in a war in Iraq. And all the generals felt that way. But, of course, the American people would never know that. There was no reason for this war. 1 million people have died, but, well, of course, it's like Vietnam. 58,000 Americans died because, of course, supposedly there was a Gulf of Tonkin incident, and it was all contrived. And 1 million South Vietnamese died, and 2 million North Vietnamese died. But we never talk about them. I wonder why. We talk about, of course, all the American casualties in Iraq, but what about the Iraqi casualties and the men and women and children who've died unnecessarily because of the war that we created? A lot of them have been actually killed by the fighting between Sunnis and Shias, but we knew that was going to happen. They knew that was going to happen when they dissolved the Iraqi army, when they dissolved the Iraqi police force, when they dissolved the Iraqi civil service, when they closed down the factories so people would have no way to make a living. And then, of course, it closed many of the hospitals and schools, and they created the chaos that is what's going on in Iraq today. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you're not taking a stand against what's going on today over there, then you're part of the problem. And you bear part of the responsibility. And when America begins picking up people because somebody says they may be a terrorist and begins to torture them to get them to confess, just close your eyes and think of the screams and ask yourself, what has happened to America? We've lost our soul. And that's because we've turned against Christianity, and we've turned against Christianity because the Supreme Court, dominated by Masons from 1941 to 1971, took God and prayer out of our schools, and not one of our major ministries will ever tell the American people that the reason that the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools was because they were controlled by the Masons. Why won't anybody tell you that? It's covered and documented in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, in the book Behind the Lodge Door, certainly in the book Unholy Alliances. We carry all of them. Behind the Lodge Door, Brotherhood of Darkness, Unholy Alliances. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Let me suggest, of course, you watch our DVD. It's called The Forbidden Secret. The Forbidden Secret, and then, of course, you can get the tape set, pardon me, the syllabus that goes with that. And then, of course, the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. Get the information. Help us get it out to others. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, we'll be back here at the same time, same station. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.